Well, hello, Viva Albertos. We are back for another episode of the VEB podcast. We're getting closer and closer to the start of baseball, but we are turning our attentions to the minor leagues. If you've been paying attention at all on the site, we've been running our basically our VEB prospect list, and it finished on what is today, everyone? Is it Wednesday? My days don't exist in the world, only dissertations exist in my world. But I think it is Wednesday, and the final vote is in. So we have our top 20 according to you all. And we have our all here to kind of evaluate this, our prospect experts and writing team, Blake Newberry, Adam Akbani, and Gabe Simmons, along with me, your knows nothing about the minor leagues host, JP Hill. So let's just start at the top over here. Blake, how's it going, man? How's your spring going?
Yeah, it's doing great. I think I've been able to catch one spring training game because for some reason, somebody thought it'd be a great idea to play all the games at 1 o'clock on weekdays when I'm at work. And then when I actually can watch a game, it's not televised. So it's been delightful.
Yeah. Same here. Absolutely. Adam, how's it going?
Great, man. It's just, you know, watching the games here or, you know, trying to watch whenever I can while just like at work or just writing something. But at the same time, it's just kind of frustrating seeing nothing televised really at all. Or also whenever it is, there's no stat casts, you get one or the other. So also kind of frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be Cardinals. I don't know if it's Roger Dean is out of date or what they're doing, or they're just not running it, but it is.
The Cardinals have it. The Astros notably don't, which is
that's surprising.
Wow. An organization
you never know. I mean, what some of these organizations, what they do and not do is always surprising to me, but yeah. Gabe, how's it going, man?
Good. Unlike you two, I have made zero effort to watch a single inning. But apparently, even if I tried, I wouldn't be able to watch anything either.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Gabe, this is your project. Have you done this every year? It seems like we've done it every year that I've been around.
This is the second year.
Second year. Okay, so well, I've got the memory. I don't know what day it is, and I don't know how long we've done things at the site that I help edit, I guess. I've never edited anything either, but that's in my title. So, hey, what do you know? So tell us about your idea going in this process. What were you looking for with this top 20 list other than a way to fill winter articles when we didn't have a whole lot to talk about?
Well, weirdly, my interest started when I was trying to get you guys to make a top 20 and we would take the cumulative amount of them and then just say, this is the writer's top 20. But you guys didn't really want to do that. So I was like, I'll do the
sounds on brand. That sounds exactly like I remember that actually now in retrospect.
Yeah. You said, I'll do like a top 5 or top 10 or something. I'm like, I like top 20 better, but.
Yeah.
And I don't think Blake with the Cardinal Nation didn't want to really do too much there. So there was just not a whole lot of momentum to get it done. So I wanted some sort of top 20 on the site. And I was like, oh, let's do the fans. And if you guys change your mind, we'll do that.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's working. There seems to have been good response. There's good debate every time. And I feel like through this process, I've learned more about, you know, these prospects. And there's been a lot of healthy debate about it. So. Today, what we're hoping for this podcast, we're just going to go down the list. These are your selections. We're going to disagree with you. Some of us will agree with your order, and we'll talk a little bit. What I like to do, because it's NFL draft season is coming up, and one of the things that annoys me, I watch a lot of NFL stuff and listen to NFL podcasts. I hate it when they like talk about a player, but then they don't really say, they'll say the last name and then they'll jump off about them. We'll actually give you a little rundown of who this player is so that you can know what position they play, what level they're on, that kind of thing. I won't do that, but I'll trust these guys to do it, or I'll look on Fangraphs and find the information. But we'll help you learn these players, and then we'll kind of go through sort of one by one. And starting at the very top, the number one prospect, according to Viva Albertos. Now, did you even do a vote on this one, on the first one?
I did not.
You did not. You skipped that one. So,
well, I didn't do it because I was like, is he even a prospect? And then I had people vote on if he was a prospect. And I said, if you guys say he's a prospect, he's a number one prospect.
So I guess they voted yes.
Yes, in a way, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. The number one is, of course, Mason Wynn, projected to be the starting shortstop for the Cardinals. See, I can provide that kind of background information, the guy that's expected to be on the team. And so we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on Wynn. But I'll just start, Blake, you know, a rundown. Mason Wynn, what do we like? What are we looking for? What are we expecting out of him this year, his first full year in the majors, presumably?
So I mean, I think we can hopefully expect to see improvement from how he played in the majors last year. The bat obviously wasn't great. What is interesting is he was a little more chase happy in AAA than he was in the majors. He actually really dialed back his aggressiveness in the majors, which is interesting. So we'll see if that carries over the course of the year. Sometimes guys who make discipline adjustments on the fly like that miss hittable pitches and they can throw things off. So I think he's still in kind of the tweaking period. But I do think he's a player who we're probably not going to see his best years for at least a few years. I think he's a guy with a lot of tools. The speed is there, the arm's there. The glove needs a little bit of work. Like the raw tools are there. I think he maybe needs a little bit better feel for shortstop. That'll come with time, hopefully. But he's still just a super exciting prospect. There's actually a decent amount of pop in the bat, good contact tools. Like he's a guy who you can be excited about, and hopefully he can at least be like a league average shortstop. Boosted by his defense this year, or like a league average shortstop in terms of overall production, boosted by his defense this year. But I do think there's a chance we could see him pushing into that four war territory if some of that hit tool and the, or not the, the hit tool, but the bat as a whole comes around. But that's years away.
So just a little thing that I find is interesting because as many of you know, if you've been reading the site, I've been out, so I'm trying to catch up a little bit. As of today, by the way, Fangraphs has spring training stats now, which is interesting. As of today, Mason Wynn, 27 plate appearances. I haven't heard a lot about Wynn, on Twitter. That doesn't mean a whole lot, but what's surprising about his stats, 107 WRC plus in those 27 PAs, not a significant number of PAs, but hitting decently, low batting average, decent power numbers, okay. But it's the walk rate, 14.8% walk rate for Mason Wynn early in this spring. He does have almost a 30% K rate. I don't read much into those numbers, only to say that in double A, a couple of years ago, Wynn had a 12.4 walk rate. So if he could get that over 10 for the year, that would help that base of offense. And then, his defense should be there too, and he'd get a productive season out of him. Any more thoughts about Wynn from you guys, you two?
Yeah, I mean, I think Blake hit a lot of the main points. I feel like I'll just build on kind of the obviously the biggest caveat with Mason Wynn, that being his power tool, right? I feel like he showed some kind of like scary power, like good in a good way towards the end of the year. Obviously, when he was called up late August, he struggled. But then I would want to highlight, I think it was from September 9th on, it was like a 42 or 43% hard hit rate, which was actually kind of astonishing. And obviously, it was a very small sample, but and he didn't really do a whole lot in terms of like, with putting the ball in play with meaning in terms of in the air and hitting a lot of line drives. But either way, it's still kind of nice to see him at least progress in that way. But it's still kind of an uphill battle. If he's still sitting in that 35 to 34, 33% range for shortstops, that puts him more in the CJ Abrams, Xander Bogaerts, Aledmys Diaz range, which is fantastic if he becomes Xander Bogaerts, but it's kind of more of a higher projectile or percentile range for him. And it's less likely to actually, for that to happen than if it was more of a 50 percentile outcome. So he's very much deserving of a top 100 ranking for sure, just by sheer virtue of his defense and his base running alone, very similar to Victor Scott, someone else we'll talk about later. But I feel like besides the beyond that, you've got plus contact abilities, but I am worried about how much power he is able to adjust to at the major league level. So we'll see how he's able to do that this year.
Do we need to see, and Gabe, I'll ask you this. Do we need to see power for Mason Wynn this year for him to be an average starter in terms of WAR production?
No, because you could kind of like, let's say he's a couple runs above average defensively and he's adds a couple runs on the base paths. I think he could be like in the, I don't know, 85 to 90 RWC plus range to be average, because shortstop offense is just the standard is not too high for him to become an average player without power.
Yeah. I feel like that would be a success if we got a 1.5 to 2.5 F war out of Mason Wynn this year, even with an 85 WRC plus. I'd take that. That would be a decent year. So.
Yeah, and even one thing on like just a caveat on the power there, like the raw power isn't terrible. He was up to above a little above 110 miles per hour in his max exit velocity last year in AAA, which is probably right around a 50 grade, probably right around league average. So it's just a matter of can he actually get into that high-end power consistently? And I think he can struggle to find the barrel a little bit, which kind of limits that. So if he can just translate that raw power to in-game power a little bit better, then we'll start to see some more extra base hits coming out of him.
That's fair.
All right, let's move down to maybe I'm not really more controversial because my personal opinion is any of the next three, whoever your preference is, I'm not going to argue with you. I mean, who cares? This isn't going to be talk radio where we've got to like hammer on each other for half an hour over whether you're going to put Tink Hintz or Roby or Roby or Hintz or Scott and Roby or Hintz or Hintz or Roby or whatever. I mean, about the only thing that I would argue with is if you try to put Sajacy above them or something, but even that would be acceptable. It'd be interesting, right? I'd be all for that. So, second on Viva Alberto's list is Tink Hintz. And so, yeah, I mean, Blake, you don't have to do all of these. But I'll let you go again. And then we'll let someone else, I'll let Gabe do Scott and Adam, you can do Roby. Okay. So Blake, give me the rundown on Tink Hintz. What do we need to know?
So I might cheat a little bit and bleed over into Roby because I see these two pitchers as similar and both having top of the rotation upside, which is why I think that it's fair to group them together. I personally have Roby just a tick higher than Hintz, but it's like splitting hairs. They're basically in the same tier. It's irrelevant. But I think Hintz of the two probably has the better fastball. It's hard. He gets maybe about a little the same amount of induced vertical break riding action on the fastball as Roby does. But Hintz throws it from a little bit lower of an arm slot. The pitch has a little more arm side run. All of that just helps it play a little bit better than Roby's fastball. The slider, he had thrown the slider and a curveball. Seems like he flipped the usage of those last year. We're used to throw the curveball more. Now he throws the slider more. It's a hard, like kind of downer action slider. Not a ton of sweep, but it gets a lot of late downward life, which just really helps it play up. And the changeup actually was probably his go-to off-speed non-fastball last year. And then probably is the best pitch in his arsenal for not talking about his fastball. So he's looking at a guy four pitches, at least three that are above average. Curveball is kind of similar to the slider. You could make an argument that that's four pitches above average, but a pitcher with an electric fastball, a really good changeup, and a really good to really good slider is definitely a top prospect.
Gabe, Adam, anything to add on hints?
No, I think he nailed it there.
Yeah. Would you put him at two, either of you guys?
No.
Why not?
I mean, I agree with him. I have Roby higher, but it's just a hair. Just and that's mostly just because he seems like he's closer. Like I feel like he's gonna make the majors sooner. That's my trump card personally.
I have a mathematical gripe with ranking prospects 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So that's a different discussion for another day, but probably just in general, I feel like you can't really say what you can't really say with confidence that 150 FE prospect is going to be better than one than another at the same level at the same time. So I feel like you can kind of just say they're about the same in terms of future value right now.
Yeah. What do we expect from Hintz? Like, is this a big year for him? Does he need to take a big step forward in innings, or is this another year where he can kind of move along, make a little progress, step up? I mean, I guess we've gotten so used to the Cardinals trying to rush these guys that going slow with a guy like Hintz, it feels like, feels like, well, is he going to really make it or not? But that's not the case at all. They're just limiting his innings and limiting his exposure. So, I mean, what should we look for this year?
I mean, I think there's probably two knocks on Hintz. One is the innings, which you've talked about. I think the Cardinals, that's not necessarily a Tink Hintz problem as much as it is the Cardinals babying Tink Hintz problem, which in my opinion isn't even a problem. They're just trying to bring him along, make sure he doesn't break. I think it'd be nice to see him start working more consistently into those 6, 7 inning outings. I do think that's something the Cardinals are going to let him do as he gets closer to the majors. So hopefully he can stay healthy for the year and prove he can actually do that. I think the other knock on Hintz was his struggles in double A, but I've heard that he kind of had some finger issues, I think, while he was in double A that affected his command, the quality of his stuff, things like that. Like I think we're probably going to see him repeat double A a little bit at the beginning of this year, and I think we'll see a lot better results.
You think they'll keep him at double A all season?
Not all season.
Yeah.
I think with the way the Cardinals are probably going to need pitching help up in the majors, Hintz would probably be one of the first ones to come up.
Yeah. Just a reminder that Hintz was 20 years old last year, right? And he only got 54 innings in double A, 12 starts. So a 20-year-old in double A, yeah, his stats aren't great. A 461 xFIP, 498 FIP, K rate of 22%, walk rate 9.2%. So it's almost like he was playing quite a few levels above himself, but yet was still able to kind of hold his own. And I would guess a fairly strong offensive environment in double A.
Yeah,
So.
those stats are basically league average. And also, I have a question for you guys. Do you think there's any chance Hence gets called up to the majors to go to the bullpen because he has to be out of the 40-man at the end of the year anyway?
I think it's possible he dips his feet starting out in the bullpen, then probably makes a slow progression to the rotation. I think that's entirely possible.
And I do think it's interesting to think about it from an innings perspective, because if the Cardinals do have a kind of an innings cap on him, they could just let him start a bunch of games early in the year, bring him up in the bullpen later, and help keep him under that innings threshold.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense. Same thing with Volpe, really.
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, I could see that. Wouldn't surprise me if they did. I would be actually kind of in favor of that. Let him test his stuff a little bit before it really, really matters. All right. So speaking of Roby, he is not your number three prospect. That belongs to Victor Scott the second, who is the darling of spring training so far at camp. And I think that they switched on me, which is perfectly fine. I think that Adam's going to talk about Victor. So Victor, Adam, tell me everything that I need to know.
Yeah, I definitely the pitching prospects is not 100% my forte, so I'll stick to more of the hitting guys. So thank you, Gabe, for allowing me to switch there. But it's been great to see Victor, have this kind of performance here at the in spring training, and obviously it's a very small sample size, and he's been arguably one of the best hitters in spring training for the Cardinals. You're hearing a lot of rhetoric here about Victor potentially making the team out of spring training, and that's we'll get into that discussion maybe in a second here. I want to hear what everyone else has to say, but just kind of breaking him down as a prospect, seeing what he's done here recently in recent PAs, including, his Arizona Fall League performance and his late Springfield performance last year in 70 games almost. I'm really excited about the contact ability. I think he'll be a plus hitter in the major league level. There's nothing to need that needs to be said about his defense and his base running, right? He's probably a fourth or third outfielder just by sheer virtue of defense and base running alone. And anything that you're going to get in terms of pure contact ability and, added power is just going to be icing on the cake on his profile, right? So that being said, the power is the big caveat that we were talking about earlier. And we've seen 10 hits from Victor Scott this spring training, and it's only one of them was an extra base hit. And it was that one triple that we don't have video of. But if I remember correctly, I think it was more of a slap hit down the line. And for most people, it would probably be a double instead of a triple. But that's kind of the thing with Victor, is that super projectable at the major league level in a larger sample? Probably not. He's probably more of a slightly below average to league average hitter at peak, which, considering how good his defense and base running is, he'll be a third outfielder. And, consider where the Cardinals are in terms of their rest of the lineup, besides shortstop and center field, which are the two caveats that we've spoken about where there's not a ton of production, everywhere else they've got that covered. So they're probably okay. But just in a vacuum, you would hope that they're probably better hitters or in terms of power. But with Victor Scott, that'll be the selling point, seeing how much he can tap into that in the future. Right now, if he's more of a 30 to 35% power hitter, that puts him obviously below, like pretty low, much below league average. It's more of a Ben Revere plus profile where he has a little bit more power than a guy like him, but he fits more near the bottom of the lineup, which is completely fine. But he's definitely not a super exciting bat as it is right now, more than he is kind of a very safe prospect and a safe bet to be an everyday player.
Gabe, why should he not make the team out of spring training?
Because he hasn't spent any time in double A. He was
Or in
pretty good.
Triple
He was pretty good in he was pretty good in double A. I mean, it wasn't skip triple A good in double A, but he was pretty good. People probably see the 300 average and think, or some people maybe, and think, oh, he's gonna be a high average guy, and he might eventually, but you gotta remember it's Springfield, so that doesn't mean as much. And just in general, I mean, I think we kind of saw evidence of this with Mason Wynn last year. He had a very, very good spring training and looked very ready for the major leagues. And then he took a while to adjust to AAA and eventually did. And then he struggled in the major leagues. Hopefully this year we'll see a similar progression. But the point is that spring training, you cannot do anything based on spring training
Yeah.
and nothing pure spring training.
And when probably you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I am the fan here, so correct me. If It probably my presumption is that even though both of them have sort of developing talent and Wynn is younger, but Wynn's offensive upside seems to be higher than Scott's was, at least sort of at double A. Like it's debatable. I'm not talking about stolen bases. I'm just talking about what their bats do. And so yeah, to think that if Wynn benefited so much from spending basically the whole year at AAA and then coming up and struggling in the majors to get him ready to where he is now. Why in the world would we think that Scott is ready to do even more than that? Like he should have at least the same kind of opportunities that Scott had or that Wynn had. Otherwise, we should expect poorer results.
Yeah, and keep in mind that Wynn benefited from almost an entire season of AAA, came up and struggled in the majors, and that was after a spring training in which he looked really good, really electric, and some fans called for him on the team. Like it's different to look really good in spring training, and it's a lot, a completely different thing to skip AAA and come up with questions about your bat and actually perform at a good level.
The last
One
point I want to
thing.
make about this, because this is still someone that I can talk about, is one thing that I like about what I'm seeing in the little bit of stats we have. I mean, you never want to make so much out of 30 at plate appearances, right? I mean, you just don't. But this spring, Scott has a 12.5% walk rate and a 12.5% K rate, and he's always held those K rates hold. He's a BABIP hitter, right? It's balls in play and speed. And so if he really can hold that K rate in the majors, kind of where it was in the minor leagues. The high he had was an 18.3 last year in double A, 14.5. If he can hold that, make that contact, and then raise his walk rate up back up to 9% or higher, which is what we saw in A and A plus. In double A, it was 5.8%, which is frankly too low. It's just too low for a guy who's a speedster. So if he can keep that walk rate up and keep that K rate down, it's a good sign. I guess that's what I'll say. Out of 32 at bats, that's a good sign, but he still needs to spend a whole year at AAA. So that is your number three prospect. How many of you would of us around this circle, how many of us would have put Scott ahead of Roby? That silence that you're hearing is the shaking of heads, because it doesn't matter. Like we're not making a big deal of this, but I think we would all have put Roby over Scott. And now, Gabe, you can tell us why.
Well, I mean,
Or tell us about Roby.
well, okay. So to be honest, I feel like Blake does a much better job of doing this than I would do because he has like the pitch mix and the stuff, and I did not come prepared.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if he's come prepared
You
if he
wrote
just.
the articles, man. Like you
I
are you
write a
had the write-ups
synopsis.
on
I
them.
write a
Pitching
synopsis of these
prospects.
prospects.
That's
I'm
all
not.
we need, man. It's Blake will get his shot. Yeah.
Well, he's a strong fastball pitcher with a great breaking ball. And so far, his main issue is he can't stay healthy necessarily. And I think that's the only reason he's not like one of the better prospects in baseball is just because he's got a significant injury and innings concern. And he's probably on a similar innings path to Hentz, even though he's thrown more in the past, just because he threw like 50 innings last year, something really low.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more, but yeah. So I don't know if they're going to have him start like 25 games or whatever you'd be on pace for in the minors, or if they'll limit him in some way, or if, like we talked about with Hentz, maybe they'll promote him to the major leagues so that his stuff can play up in the bullpen and maybe hopefully the playoffs. But yeah, so I mean, I just think Roby and Hentz are so close together. So if you think that's what confused me about Scott being third, honestly, was just that I thought Roby and Hentz were like intertwined, basically. And I didn't understand Scott separating the two. That's my main beef with that. Even though I think Thomas DeJacy is a better prospect than Scott too. I know you said otherwise, but anyway,
I wouldn't argue with that actually at all. I really wouldn't. Yeah.
but yeah, that was my only like confusion with the vote was just that Roby and Hentz are like neck and neck to me, and then Scott just kind of goes in between. That confused me.
Yeah. So yeah, just to kind of give you a couple stats, it's the only thing I'm going to have to add on Roby. Double A with Texas, 46 innings. Came back with St. Louis, another 12, so 58 innings. Great K rate in St. Louis in particular, but good K's in the Texas organization as well. I don't know what his cumulative FIP would have been, but it was 3.84 with Texas and 2.36 with St. Louis. So, I mean, Roby really, besides the injury, just had a really good
Did he pitch in the
working
AFL
season.
too, right?
He did. Yeah, and Blake, go ahead.
I think he struggled in the
He
AFL.
did. Yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Which is interesting. But again, we're talking about like a 10-inning, 20-inning sample, something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you Gabe nailed it with Roby's arsenal. I think one thing that's interesting is that we've seen him throw his slider and his changeup harder, in particular in spring training. And the especially interesting thing is that he's thrown his changeup about 4 miles per hour harder, which is notable. And usually when you throw a change of 4 miles per hour harder, you're losing depth, but he's actually gained depth. His changeup is somehow dropping more despite being thrown harder, which seems to defy the laws of gravity. But Tekoa Roby is that kind of a pitching prospect. So I think you look at a guy who already has the nasty fastball curveball combo, and now all of a sudden he's throwing a harder gyro slider and a better changeup, and he just keeps taking steps forward. It really just comes down to health for him.
Yeah. So I got a question for you because we're not going to just go through every one of these like 10 minutes on each one. We don't need to do that about Simmer Bur. Well, I don't know, Simmer Bursa is kind of interesting, but there's interesting things about all these guys. But if we did that, we'd be here all day. So if we talk about like grouping prospects in terms of talent, and Adam kind of mentioned the 50 grade talent, the 45, the 55 grade talent, the 60 grade talent, where you got like Jordan Walker at the top and maybe like. Would Sejacy be a 50? He probably is close to a 50, maybe a 45, somewhere in that range, right? As a prospect, we talk about grouping these guys in that top grouping. If we take Wynn out of it, and kind of kick him up to on the edge of promotions, how deep would we go for that top grouping? Like, would it be all the way through Sejacy? Would we add Jerpy in there, Graceffo? Like, how big is your top grouping? Go from this prospect list. And just so you know, I don't know if you guys have it up. I'm sure you do, but on the list it was Wynn, Hinch, Scott, Roby, Sejacy, Graceffo, interesting, and then Jerpy Davis, McGreevy, and then Robursa. But we're all the way down at 10 by then. So how deep would your top grouping go of like these are the ones at the top?
I would go. Who was
No, go
talking?
for it. You got it,
No,
Adam.
Adam, go ahead.
No,
Yeah.
Blake, I always cut you off and I always go. So
I
you.
we do it to each other. You're good.
Okay, sure. Okay, so I guess I feel like Mason Wynn, Tink Hentz, Roby, and Scott, just by sheer virtue of his defense and base running, you kind of have to put him in a 50 FE tier. So I think like those four are probably, I don't think there's anyone that's probably above. I feel like some people might rank Mason Wynn as maybe a half a tier above a 50, but I personally have him as a league average player just by sheer virtue of no power, or at least projectable power, at least in my opinion, with the contact ability. Chase Davis and Thomas Szczesny are probably your 45s, and then from there you probably start going down. I think you have Jerpy might still be a 45. Graceffo at probably a 45 as well, no longer a 50. Wonbin Cho, I'll throw him in as probably a 40 plus at this point, then you kind of start going down from there. But for the top tier, I probably would put those four.
And some of that's projectable rankings. Like Cho's a great example. Like Cho's 11th on our list. If you wanted to convince me that Cho was a 45-50, I would agree with you, right? But he's so far away that you can't throw him up there with Wynn. I mean, that's silly. So how deep would you go? Like in terms of your this grouping of process, would you throw Sejacy in there, Gabe?
Absolutely. I might even say Scott's just a touch off.
Yeah.
If I and Wynn would be a touch above for me than the other guys as well. So it'd be Roby Henson. So JC would be neck and neck. And then Scott, I'm borderline on him going in that group or not. But I mean, I'm a fan of Scott, but apparently I'm not because I'm lower on him than most people.
But
Seems. But
it's all relative. I mean, like
yes.
saying that Scott's lower than Sejacy is not saying he's bad. It's just saying
Exactly.
that Sejacy was the best player in Double A last year. I mean,
Right.
yeah.
No, you're right. Because I thought I was high on him when I didn't know how everybody else felt, and then everybody put him on their top 100, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah. Well, that's actually a good point of reference too. So, Blake, what do you think? How far down do you go?
So I would actually get a little more granular and split these guys up a little bit more. I think I have Tink Hentz and Tekoa Roby in the same tier at the top, and just like a little like half step down is Sejacy and Victor Scott. And then below that is your like Cooper Jerpy's, Gordon Graceffo's, Chase Davis, like to different degrees, because like I see Jerpy and Davis having higher ceilings, maybe Graceffo has a higher floor. Like you can throw in a risk rating that kind of puts them all in the same tier, but I'm a little bit higher on the pitching prospects than I am on the hitting prospects, and I actually do have Sejacy in the same tier as Scott, but a little bit higher than Scott.
Yeah, the only reason why I would put Scott ahead of Sejacy is well, not really though, but like it just feels like Scott's got more of a chance of really impacting the major leagues this year, whereas Sejacy's probably going to have to wait his turn. And also, I kind of get the idea, and this is just a gut thing. I haven't really heard this. I talked with Jeff Jones a little bit about it, but nothing concrete, that Sejacy could get a pretty decent run at shortstop at double A this season, and seeing what happens with that. Not that he would push, win off the position or anything, but Sejacy needs to develop some versatility. If Sejacy can play shortstop by the end of the year at the same level that like Paul DeJong could whenever he came up, that just makes him that much more of an interesting prospect to me. So yeah, and we might as well just go ahead and talk about that. Any thoughts about Sejacy, other than what we've said? And Blake, you can give us a rundown on him.
Yeah, so actually, I'll keep going with what you said earlier. Like, it would be interesting to see Sejacy play shortstop more because I think he's at second and third is kind of blocked in the majors, honestly. So he needs a more of a utility profile. I would love to see him take the Brendan Donovan route and add like some left field to his game, some right field. I don't know if he has that in him. The Cardinals coaching staff probably does, but I would love to see him just get a chance out there because if he can even, he just needs to do something to get himself on the field because the guy can just flat out hit. And that's why I have him a little bit higher than Scott. And I know he's so Jason is like not really a metric darling at the plate, which is interesting for the amount of production that he's put up, which is probably why national prospect rankings are a little bit lower on him. But when you look at Sejacy, what he lacks for in like top end max exit velocities, he makes up for in barrel accuracy and inconsistency and just simply hitting balls at the upper end of his exit velocity ranges. And not only that, but also elevating the ball and pulling his fly balls. Like that's just a really good combo. If he's not a guy who's going to hit these like ridiculous 120 mile per hour bombs, it doesn't matter because he just needs to hit it like 104 to his pull side in the air and he's good. And he does that with tremendous consistency.
Like, there's a guy on Twitter, I think Chris Clegg, who said Thomas Sejacy is the king of ideal launch angles or something like that. Because
Absolutely.
they're both like getting homers when they can be homers and also like the little bloops. But and then, but I, Jason, you said something interesting. You thought Scott had a better chance of contributing at the major league level this year. I don't know if I agree with that because, and this is more like roster construction reason. So Sejacy's in AAA already, he has to be out of the 40 man at the end of the year. So there's no reason to like delay it necessarily. Scott doesn't have to be out until the end of next season and he hasn't seen AAA yet. So that can influence decisions where if a player isn't doesn't have to be out of the 40 man, they might be like, well, we don't really want to call him up for like 10 games and then he sucks and we'll calm down. We've already burned an option. And also we might need that 40 man spot over the offseason. That's why Burleson never got added, I don't think, that one year.
So I feel like the reason why, I mean, I guess like what we talked about, this kind of goes counterintuitive to what I said about the, the future values and like having tiers and, significance and confidence. But if you're going to get granular, I feel like the reason why you would potentially go Victor Scott is that you could throw him out in center field March 28th and he for the whole year and he'd be like a win and a half in center field and just by base running, right? But he'd be like a 75 or 80 WRC plus while doing it. Which just kind of shows you if he's like a even a 110 or 120, he's probably like a 4 or 5 win player. But the thing is that just because he can do that, you can throw him out there and do that without you can't really do that with Thomas Sejacy putting him at third or at short or at second. He's probably like a 40 shortstop, and you want to take this time and like with like what Blake said and this season in Memphis, kind of see and test really his versatility and put him out in the outfield just to see what he can and can't do, but. I still feel like if you put him out in the major leagues, he had that 4 for 4 game. Not a single batted ball was over 103 miles an hour, I don't believe. So because you don't have a ton of production there, I still feel that maybe his 95 percentile exit velo will be higher, just like what Blake said, that he's still reaching that production quite often. I still feel like just because of that defense alone, you would go with Victor Scott on day one if you had to, right? If you put a gun to my head, you'd pick Victor Scott, maybe not Sejacy, but long term, I would take the offensive profile of Thomas Sejacy more than maybe Victor Scott.
I think I finally figured out who Sejacy reminds me of. I've been working on this a little bit. And again, I'm not your expert here. I'm just the idiot host, right? But I love my comps and they're terrible, so ignore them. But I still love them to death. So I've been trying to think of a player in the Cardinals past who like had power. It was a little bit late developing power as far as prospect status, but was really more like a drive the ball, contact line drive hitter. And I like, because people keep mentioning Brendan Donovan, I really struggle to see the Brendan Donovan comp, because Brendan Donovan, what makes him go at the major league level is his ability to draw walks. And if Sajacy could draw walks at the level that Brendan Donovan would, we'd be talking about him as a superstar, but he can't. That's not what he does. But what he does do is have great contact and can hit the ball, line drive, all fields, and has some measure of defensive versatility. Well, the guy that he reminds me of coming up, and I don't know if you guys are even old enough to really have followed him when he was in the minors, but it's David Freese. And so David Freese came up as a medium, he was a bigger guy, medium power guy, drove the ball to right field, didn't walk a lot, but he had high contact, high BABIP, high, I can't say that word today. My gosh. High BABIP rates. And I remember a quote from John Mozeliak back whenever it was, I can't even remember the year. When someone asked him, well, Freeze is getting close, and I can't remember who was playing third base at the time, but do you think Freeze might be a possibility at second? And you guys have seen David Freeze now. And Mo said, "Are you kidding? Have you seen the guy?" Well, in this case, here's what I would imagine. What if David Freeze, as a hitter, could potentially play second base, left field, and shortstop? And David Freeze at second base and shortstop is, I mean, David Freeze at third base was a pretty darn good player. So David Freeze at shortstop would be that much more interesting, plus the defensive versatility. So,
I like that comp. I like
yeah,
that
I mean, it's not the worst comp. I mean, it's not, they don't look the same. They don't hit the same. There's some similarities. He's not Alan Craig. He's not Matt Carpenter. He's not Brendan Donovan. Of the guys that I've seen come up through the Cardinal system, David Freeze is the guy. And I would take another David Freeze, honestly, especially
Sure.
for
I guess
Gabe.
if you had to go, I guess outside of the system, or I guess the Cardinals organization as a whole in their history, one guy I do kind of like as a not a comparison, but a very similar, like I guess a comparison is Chris Taylor of the Dodgers. I guess formerly
Yeah.
with the Dodgers, like got that versatile role. He can play almost anywhere. He's a pretty patient hitter. Got over a 10% walk rate. Does have his fair share of strikeouts. So his the contact ability could use a little bit of work. And he's probably more of like a 40 or 45 power guy with that 35 to 40% hard hit rate, which is slightly below league average. So if he can do that, which I feel like is more of a Walmart version of Chris Taylor, because Chris Taylor in his prime was pretty good, of like one of the best utility players in baseball, and he's
Yeah,
still
a
pretty good in
five war
general.
player,
But
basically, in other
yeah,
words.
so if Thomas suggests he's a five war player, that's a pretty high outcome. But
Yeah, but I
if
see
he's
that. Yeah, three high BABIP player, walks were probably better than what we might see from say. I think that Taylor struck out more than we'll see from Sajacy, but he could also play center, and I think Taylor played some shortstop too. If I'm am I right about that? Yeah. So, oh, of course, yeah. I mean, we're just talking about Sajacy doing that. If Sajacy can play shortstop, I bet he could play a little bit of center, but he might not get the chance. So. There's 20 minutes on Thomas Sajacy. So actually, it wasn't 20 minutes. It was less than that. But I'm not surprised that we got caught up with him, because he's really an intriguing guy. Let's move down the list here. We've got Graceffo, we've got Jerpy, and we've got Davis. And first of all, of those three, would you reorder those a little bit? We'll just start with anyone. Anyone wants to jump in? Graceffo, Jerpy, Davis. How would you guys have ordered that?
I think I'd bump Jerpy up over Graceffo just because I think Jerpy has higher upside. Like, I
Yeah.
think Jerpy could potentially be that guy you'd look at as like a number two in rotation. I don't think Graceffo gets there. You can factor in risk all you want and put Graceffo up there, but I'd put Jerpy higher.
Yeah.
I'd probably keep it, but I feel like there's a I'm I don't know. I'm a little I feel like there's a high degree of likelihood that Jerpy ends up in the bullpen, but that's my main reason
That's
why.
completely fair.
I
Yeah.
feel like Graceffo third for sure, just because you go power over finesse, just with and just like offensively or pitching wise with Jerpy now with that velo bump, and then just Chase Davis being a 65 power guy out of Arizona, right? So, and then Graceffo now you're seeing that velo decrease. I think we saw that graphic between like his last like start. It might have been like an injury thing or just maybe just taking him time to ramp up, but. It isn't pretty, and I feel like it's probably now, and you're probably cooling down on Gordon Graceffo a little bit from being a mid-tier rotation starter like you once thought he was.
Yeah.
Do you have any notes on Graceffo, Blake? Like
Yeah.
anything you've seen or any numbers you've seen this
I'll
spring?
say Graceffo does not have velocity to lose. I'm not one to get caught up with velocity changes in spring training, so we'll see if it happens actually in the season.
Yeah.
But like it's not a good sign. The fastball shape is quite frankly just not great. So if he's sitting 93, that's going to get hit a lot harder than if he's like 96.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
well.
was kind of like wondering your thoughts on that, like the below, like from like that one start you thought if it was like a ton
It's
of work.
concerning. It's concerning for sure.
Concerning. Okay, yeah.
I'm not bought into it yet because I'm not bought into a lot of things that happen in spring training, but it's definitely something I'll be watching for in his first couple starts and after spring training breaks.
Were these Statcast numbers?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All
That's
right.
why I was like.
Yeah. All right. If it's just gun numbers at a park, I might not be concerned about it. But if it's Statcast, then it's at least consistent. So, yeah. Are you guys even old enough to remember the wild days of like crazy different velocity numbers that you would get depending on the alignment of the gun? Like, I bet you guys aren't even old. Gabe would be, but I mean, there were times where velocities would drop and dip and go everywhere, and it's because the gun was pointed a little bit different angle, and it was, yeah, those were the fun days of analysis. So,
Is that how you got Nolan Ryan throwing 110?
yeah. I mean, if you measure it out of the hand, it's stuff like that. So, all right, let's go. Any thoughts on Davis? Give us a rundown on Davis. I think he's an important prospect. So Blake, give us a rundown on Chase Davis.
I mean, it's probably a power over hit kind of guy. The high-end exit velocities were similar to like Dylan Cruz, who got drafted a lot earlier than Chase Davis. Like the power is legit. He struggled with the wood bat in college, so people thought he might struggle a little bit in the minors, and he got drafted, and then he struggled in the minors. So like there's definitely some risk involved, but he's a guy with a big arm. Started out in center field, might be able to stick in center field. I think he probably moves to right field long term, but he might be able to stick in center field, which for a guy who can hit the ball as hard as he can, that's obviously exciting. I think he's a candidate for a swing change. I think a lot of times we see the Cardinals draft players, throw them into the fire as soon as they can, especially for hitters, and then let them just play. And then they use that first offseason to make adjustments. And I think Chase Davis is a guy who very easily could tone down his swing. He has a big stride, a lot of hand action in his load. I think he's a guy the Cardinals might try to just tone him down a little bit to see if he can make better contact.
Yeah.
You think they do that? To
Go ahead.
convince the hit, sorry, I was gonna say, do you think they do that to convince the hitter like this isn't working?
I think there's a chance of that, but I think there's also just scouting versus game results. Like you can see something and say, hey, it might not work. It might work, it might not. But then you just throw a player in and you're like, all right, let's see if it does work. And they're new. You probably don't want to tweak something about a player you don't fully understand how his body moves yet. So I think getting like half a season to actually understand how it works is helpful. But then I also do think there's a part of that where if you don't think it's going to work and then it doesn't work, you could say, hey, look, you should probably change this.
Makes sense.
So two next on the list, two pitchers, which I kind of feel like, I mean, they belong together, but also I would put a little bit of a gap. But this is just because of what my change in philosophy after learning a little bit about Zips and the AAA environment. So 9 and 10, we got McGreevy, former number one or first round draft pick, not a number one draft pick, but you know what I mean. And Sim Rabursa, who is one we've talked about quite a bit on the show, back when we got him. I now play for the Cardinals. Back when the Cardinals got him at the trade deadline, and then we got Wonbin Cho, who I think deserves a little bit of a conversation. So McGreevy, Rabursa. Thoughts like what did we see from McGreevy this year that made him so interesting to Zips? And Gabe, I'll let you answer that question. I know I just sprung it on you, but I think you can probably handle it pretty quick.
Well, I mean, the interesting thing about McGreevy to me is that how much like I mean, he's still performing. It's crazy because the scouting is just not good for him, as
Yeah.
far as I know, and it's hard to just ignore the fact that he keeps performing, especially given the run environment of the AAA. However, he might be a player who benefit not benefits. That's the wrong word. Who isn't punished by the ABS system? Because I as far as I understand it, if you were a high ball pitcher, if you throw it high, they just don't call it a strike. And if you throw it low, then you're not getting punished by it at all. And since he's kind of a ground ball pitcher, he's probably a little bit of a low ball pitcher where he could throw it down low and they'll call it a strike like it's supposed to be called. So I'm torn between those two elements where he's very young too, and he's performing at AAA, and that's hard to ignore. At the
Yeah.
same time, I'm wondering how much that matters.
Here's the question I have for you guys about McGreevy. And it's not necessarily a valid question because I think maybe, well, boy, I don't know. That's a hard statement. Let me just say what I'm thinking, and then you can disagree with me or agree with me. My question about McGreevy is what if Dakota Hudson actually didn't walk anyone? Is that what Michael McGreevy might be?
I don't think he gets
Because
enough ground balls for that to
you
be.
don't think so? Because I mean, he had like a
Oh.
67% ground ball rate in
Oh.
Double A. It did drop a little bit last year, but I know he is a ground ball oriented guy. But is he just not that much of a ground ball guy, Blake?
No, it's interesting because his sinker actually had like a 63% ground ball rate.
Yeah.
It's just the rest of his pitch, like his slider gets hit in the air, his curveball gets hit in the air. Like the changeup was pretty good. So it just kind of depends on the pitch mix, but he definitely can get ground balls, at least with the sinker.
Yeah. But I always thought that about Hudson, like the stuff. I mean, he actually had quite a bit of movement, but it was the stuff he couldn't get swing and miss. And then if he could just keep the ball in the zone and not walk guys, then that's when, some of his minor league stats were impressive. Well, McGreevy has never walked anyone. And that could change it if he has to pitch on the margins of the plate in the major leagues. That's kind of what happened with Hudson. Hudson didn't have high walk rates in the minors either because he could get a lot of downward action on that on his pitches. So, McGreevy not walking anyone at all, there's a chance that he could survive with a minuscule, K rate if he can stay in the zone on the edges of it and still get outs. But who knows?
I guess it's not that I don't think he could get be a ground ball pitcher. Like Hudson's career ground ball rate is 55%, and when he was actually, slightly better of a pitcher, it was even higher than that.
Yeah, it
And that's just,
was.
it's like a high bar to expect of anybody really, even especially a guy with fringy stuff to just come in and have like a 57% ground ball rate
Yeah.
without walking people. That's hard to do.
It is. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why Hudson's walk rate went up in the majors. And
Yeah.
it wasn't just because he couldn't control, it's because he couldn't throw the ball down the middle or it would get crushed.
It
So,
was also because he couldn't control, but yeah.
well, that too. Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. So let's go to, unless you got some thoughts on McGreevy. I mean, you got any more thoughts on Michael McGreevy, Adam?
Oh, I mean, I guess just one thought, and we were talking about, oh, like why a player might like him might be somewhat favored is that I know some teams' pitching models might value just pure volumes in terms of innings over just like I guess a efficiency like per rate efficiency, right? So that's why you see the Cardinals go after guys like Gibson, Miles Michaelis, Lance Lynn. Guys will just go out there and gobble up like 180 plus innings any given year as long as they're healthy, and they may not be 25 plus strikeout percentage guys. So that's he kind of fits that continuum mold. We've talked about that. Hopefully that kind of continues to change, but it works until it doesn't, until he loses command of the fastball, which we've seen Hudson, as good as a sinker as was as a prospect, didn't just didn't happen as a major leaguer, and he got teed off on. So
Yeah.
it'd be nice
Always
not
happens.
to pay $12 million for that guy. So hopefully that works out.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, yeah, if you get Kyle Gibson production out of Michael McGreevy next year, then that's a benefit. The Cardinals would love that. Pocket
We can
that
get
$12
Kyle
million
Gibson.
dollars. So, Blake, here's what I want you to do. We'll just do one thing on Robursa. I want you to convince me that Sim Robursa is going to be a starter and not a reliever. Convince me.
Sim Robursa is a good fastball away from being a top three pitching prospect in the organization, maybe a top two. Like the guy has a nasty sweeper. His changeup, which doesn't get talked about as much as a sweeper, is just honestly an incredible pitch. It has like an extra 20 inches of depth off his fastball and is only like 3 miles per hour slower, which is crazy for a changeup. That's the most effective changeup shape when you look at changeup vertical difference from the fastball. Like it's a power changeup. It's going to miss a ton of bats. His sweeper is going to miss bats. He has a cutter to bridge it. His fastball is just incredibly mediocre.
Yeah.
Why is every Cardinals pitching prospect a fastball
That's a
away?
trend.
Welcome
Yeah.
to
Yep.
the Cardinals.
Oh my
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. I mean, we're going to stay on target today, guys. I mean, we are right on target. We're at 40 minutes, 8 minutes in. We got 12 minutes left. We got basically 10 more prospects to get through. And I don't think anyone needs 10 minutes on Pedro Páez, although I know that we could give you 10 minutes on Pedro Páez. I know that we can. So here's what I want to do. From 11 through 15, we've got Wonbin Cho, Max Rachick, Leonardo Bernal, Ian Bedell, Adam Klopfenstein. Now, all of these guys we've talked about on the show previously. So if you've watched and listened to us, then you know sort of something about these guys. So I want you to pick one of the guys. So each of you can pick one. You don't have to give me a rundown. It can even be the same one. At this point, it doesn't matter. But I want to know which of those guys you find interesting and why. And since he's our resident actual minor league expert, we'll start with Blake, and that'll give you guys a chance to pick and choose. Again, it doesn't matter if you pick the same person. That's fine. Blake, of those next five, who do you find interesting and why?
I love Hwangbin Cho because the way he plays the game, he is just so smooth at every single thing he does. It's the bat flips, it's the way he plays the outfield, it's the way he runs the bases, it's the way he swings the bat. Everything is smooth. He has all the tools. He can throw, he can hit, he can hit for power. Like everything's there. He just beats the ball into the ground constantly. And if he could just learn how to elevate the ball, he would be a really, really effective hitter. And he's still young, he can still learn it. That can be a tough change to make, but it's something I'm really interested to see if he can actually make.
That's fair. That's what I was going to say. Mostly from the level of interest, is Wonbin chose. I'll pick another one, but I'll go here in a minute. So I'll just go around the circle. Adam, who stands out to you that you want to talk about?
I was gonna pick Cho, but since Blake, you took him, I guess I'll go Bernal. Like I was thinking Bernal was gonna break out and be the next great Cardinals catching prospect in that line. You had Carson Kelly, then you had, I guess kind of some time where it was Kisner, then Ivan Herrera, and then now I guess the next kind of like the attempt to replace Yadier Molina would be a guy like Leonardo Bernal. And like, I thought he was going to be obviously a glove first with some pop. I saw him hit a absolute like piss missile at 111 miles an hour as an 18-year-old back in September of 2022. I think it was in single A. And I saw that, I was like, okay, like if an 18-year-old who can do this, there's not many who can beat 110. So I'm gonna project on that, him being a catcher. But just by the position value alone, I would think that he's probably gonna be a top 100 prospect if all goes well, and maybe has an above 115 or 120 WRC plus and has some pop to show for it. But he really, I guess, consistent pop to show for it. And he didn't exactly do that at Palm Beach. He spent the whole year there. I thought he would get a promotion to Peoria. That didn't happen, but he's still very young. The tools are all there, very similar to Herrera, but I do feel like he does need some maybe some more time, and he should start in Peoria this year, and maybe he'll be in the major leagues in a few years. But I do like him as, a young prospect, a young catcher who can hit that kind of max and exit velocities at that age.
Gabe, who you got?
I go with Max Rajic, because I mean, first off, he was a minor league pitcher of the year last year. You can't ignore that. And I forgot what it was. I thought I saw somebody say that he's very good at getting spin on his pitches, and that he's tweaking his one of his breaking pitches, and he just something about the way he throws baseball just naturally adds a bunch of spin to his pitches, and that makes it very easy for him to like tweak and adjust and miss bats, and he could outpitch what his basic tools might suggest. And so far he has, frankly, because he was what, a six rounder? Seven, six rounder, I think, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. Something like
Yeah.
that. Yeah.
And he immediately is already, I think, is he gonna be in triple A next year? Like that's insane rise for a six rounder to be in triple A the year and a half after being drafted. So yeah, he's very interesting. I want to see if he continues being successful. I think, again, I didn't watch any spring training games, that his spring training appearance was very encouraging. The numbers on his stuff plus and stuff. But I'm just going from memory. I don't have those stats in front of me. But yeah. So Matt Rajic is my pick.
I'll pull up his stats here and talk about Ian Bedell is the other guy that I would have talked about. And what I love about Bedell, I mean, we've talked about, I mean, all the way back for Rule Five stuff with Bedell, but Bedell is the kind of guy that the Cardinals are not going to have any qualms about moving and moving fast. Very successful season at A plus. I don't see there's any reason why he would go back there. I'm sure they'll move him straight to Double A at the beginning of the season. And so he's the kind of guy that could spend half a season at Double A, push all the way up to AAA, and then be knocking on the doors of the majors by the end of the season, probably for a bullpen role. But I mean, if you look at his stats and what he did last year, if that translates on up, you're looking at a legitimate starter and definitely a quality bullpen arm. So, pretty excited about what's there. What are we at? Like number, what was Bedell? Number 14. When you got a prospect and an arm like Ian Bedell and the stats that he's put at number 14, you're doing pretty good. So I want to look at, yeah, this spring, three innings for Raichik. Nothing to really report on that. I don't have any Statcast here. I guess I should have looked somewhere else, but this is all I had. So yeah, not as many innings as I thought, but good report so far for Raichik.
Bedell's another who has to be out of the 40-man at the end of the year, so they may again promote him to the bullpen by the end of the year if they feel he's ready. So
Yeah.
we got a lot of starters who could go to the bullpen in September if they really want to take that route.
Yeah. So we got the order is, and again, we don't need to get too precise here. I'm just wondering if there's any big movements. You got Cho, who pretty much all of us wanted to list as our favorite. Then you've got Raichik, you've got Bernal, you've got Bedell, and then Klopfenstein, who we didn't mention, number 15. Would anyone reorder that in any significant way? Did we miss on that one, the group, or do you think they kind of got it about right?
I feel like it's good. I feel like once you kind of get down at this point, you really can't say that one is going to be better than the other.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's mostly right, and these guys are all probably about in the same tier.
Yeah. I like that Cho is at the beginning of it. I might have bumped Bedell up, but I don't know who I would have moved down. Like, I would certainly wouldn't move Bernal down, and we know what Raichik did. So yeah, pretty much where it is. So the last ones we've got, and Gabe, if you want to go ahead and give the results, by the time this comes out, it'll be published. But we're recording this on Wednesday, and the last poll was up, and it looks like that who is going to be our number 20?
Travis Honeyman.
Yeah. So Honeyman is our number 20. That gives us from 15 on. Number 16 is Jimmy Crooks the third, Pedro Páez, Matt Swanson, Bryson Motz, and then Travis, is it Honeyman or Honeyman?
Yes.
Yes. It's got to be Honeyman, but I like Honeyman personally. And he can come on the show and correct us. You're welcome anytime. So I'll admit, I mean, I know a little bit about Crooks. I definitely know Páez. We talked about Swanson at the trade deadline. Motz is a name that's been on my radar, but that's about it. So again, we'll just start with Blake. Pick anything you know about anyone, but who's the guy that we really need to be watching from this group, Blake? And I
I
know
love Matt
maybe. Yeah, I
Swanson,
was
and
gonna.
I'm so surprised that he made it into the top 20 because I don't even have him in my personal top 20 simply because he's a reliever. But I absolutely love that he made it in the top 20 because I love Matt Swanson.
Yeah.
I was actually hoping to see him more in spring training. I actually think he's a guy who really could be in the bullpen
I
like
agree. Yeah.
pretty quickly, even though he has barely pitched in AAA. The sinker slider guy. Sinker is throwing, it's like 95 miles per hour with like 16, 17 inches of run on average. Slider gets a lot of sweep the other way. He can work it up and down. He gives hitters a lot of different looks. Like he's just an all around really effective pitcher. I think he maybe just kind of slipped through the cracks in some of the rankings that I've seen from national guys because he's older and a relief only prospect. But
Yeah.
when you look at the stuff is absolutely there. And I feel fairly confident that he's going to be an effective reliever at the major league level.
So just as a point of reference, I like to throw in these little like tidbits. So last year with Toronto, A plus. So this is A plus, 31% K rate in A plus, and then came over to St. Louis, double A. They promoted him right away. 29.1% K rate. So, and his walk rates have always been really good. So it's the kind of strikeout production that you want from a reliever. And even though, yeah, he's a little bit older, 24 last year, 25 this year, here he is on the majors, on the doorstep of the majors, triple A, striking guys out. I would be surprised, honestly, if we didn't see him at some point this season.
Also, I'll add when we like talk about pitchers, the three things we generally tend to talk about: strikeouts, walks, ground balls. So we're looking at Matt Swanson, who had a 29% strikeout rate,
Yeah.
below 6%, and a ground ball rate of 66%. He literally
66%. Yeah.
does all three.
Yeah. I mean, no, I don't want to say it. I won't say it. I was going to make a horrible comp that the internet would have gotten me on, but I won't do it. So never mind. Won't even say it.
No, you gotta say it.
No, I'm not going to. It's a terrible comp. Yeah. Not going to do it. Totally unfair to Swanson. And then now you'll just have to
Tell us off
wonder. All
camera.
of you will wonder. Do what?
Tell us off camera.
Yeah, I'll tell you off. Yeah, because it's that interesting. Yeah, that juicy information on the number 19 prospect. 18. Sorry, Matt. Didn't mean to insult you there by cutting it down one. Okay, so anything else? Anyone got anyone on the last group of five there that stands out to you? Anything you wanted to talk about any of them?
I really, really like Jimmy Crooks. Again, this is another guy. I mean, it feels like the Cardinals have a lot of prospects on this list who are like way younger than you'd think they'd be for the
Yeah,
level they're
Crooks is, yeah.
at. And he is just hit at each level. I'm getting like mixed reports on his defense from what I'm reading about him, which is like certain sites will be like, he's a defense first catcher. And I'm like, really? How is he not a bigger prospect if he's a defense first catcher? And then other sites are like, he could stick a catcher, but it's bad is why. Or if his bat develops, it's why he'll become maybe an effective major leaguer. But yeah, he's I'm gonna look at his stats real quick. At high A last year, he had a 122 WRC plus, 10.9% walk rate, 21.2% K rate, 162 isolated power, which isn't great, but like nothing like fancy going on here, but his great walk rate, good K rate, and he's a catcher. And he just seems like a if he keeps playing well, I mean, he's on track to be in AAA by 23 years old. Then, I mean, as a catcher, that's about as good as you can get.
Yeah. Right. What about the rest of you guys? Adam, Blake?
I guess I'll just go. I guess since you're down at this part of the list, I feel like you can't really go wrong with I guess a toolsy Power Five conference bat like Travis Honeyman when he was in college, right? I mean, he struggled to stay healthy on the field while he was there for his 3 years. He didn't play more than 41 games in any college season. So, I still bet on the 60 grade power because he hit six home runs, or sorry, was it? Yeah, six home runs in 39 games last year at Boston College. So, over the course of like almost 160 games, that's like 20 or more, which, for a third round pick is pretty decent. He did steal 10 bases, which, like obviously base running isn't like the easiest to project at that level, but I feel like you do have to have some speed at least in order to try. He was a right fielder. I feel like he could get some shots in center just depending on where he starts out. So just simply like the 4 or 5 tool profile, even if it's not like just super pretty right now, it is projectable with a third round pick. And I feel like he would have stayed healthy, or at least healthier, would have had more time to prove himself, potentially more in conference play. Within the ACC out there at BC, probably would have had more of an opportunity to potentially rise maybe into the second round or maybe be a comp pick. But I feel that, and he was hurt for the end of the season last year, right? So that was an issue. So we'll see what he does. I think what is more likely to get us assigned, I gets assigned to Palm Beach to start out, given that he'll be 20 or he is 22 and he'll be 23 in October. So need to get him started soon. And I would love to see what he can do. It's a low risk guy, but, if it all works out, he's got the tools to be. A potential producer at the major league level and not like a role player where it's like, not a very toolsy player.
Like, I'm going to ask you a different question. Looking at the just misses, is there anyone on the just miss list, which I don't know if you have the side up, but the guys that were in the poll was Baez, Ryan Fernandez, Moises Gomez, Honeyman one, Edgar Nunez, Noah Mendlinger. It's too far away for me to read it without knowing. Cesar Prieto, Drew Rom, Zach Showalter, Michael Ciani. Any of those that you definitely would have put on the list, that didn't make it.
I don't know about definitely would have put on the list, but Zach Showalter is a standout, and I know he doesn't have a huge track record. I mean, he was 19 last year, pitched a little bit in single A,
Yeah.
but you watch him and he's just such a funky pitcher. It's weird. He like bends himself down, like he like crouches down when he releases the ball. It's like a whole weird thing he has going on, but it actually gives his fastball like a really weird shape. It comes from a low slot. Probably about league average ride, but honestly, it doesn't really matter how much riding life he gets. When he throws the ball from as low as he does, it's going to play well up in the zone. And then his curveball sweeper can be a little floaty, but it has good movement. I'd love to see him throw it harder, but there's some really interesting bat missing stuff out of Showalter, and he looks like a guy who could, with more innings under his belt, could really take a step up in how he's viewed. All
Blake,
right. Yeah, go ahead,
can I
Gabe.
mention the guy
Absolutely.
as well?
I was just
Sorry.
saying, can I ask you about somebody you have in your top 20 who I statistically there's not a huge argument for?
Sure.
Edwin Nunez. You have him 20th, right?
22.
Oh, 22.
Yeah.
Was he 20 overall on your site?
I think he was 20 overall. Let me see, actually.
I thought he was 20th.
Yeah, he was 20 overall. So the site is it's a composite ranking of my ranking and Brian Walton's ranking.
Okay.
So Brian actually had him 20. I had him 22, but because it's a composite and averages get weird, that pushed him to 20. The stuff is outstanding. He's obviously had issues with walks, but he is a guy, he throws so hard. And his curveball just gets like a ridiculous spin rate. It averages like pretty much 3,000 RPMs of spin. It's a pitch that doesn't, frankly, miss a ton of bats right now, or at least as many as it should. He misses bats, but he doesn't miss as many as he should. It's just when I see a guy who has elite velocity and elite spin rates on the breaking ball, he has the raw tools. He just needs to refine them into getting a sharper breaking ball and just improve the command a little bit. So I think he's more of a project. Which is why he can't be on my top 20, but he has the guy to be a really expl or he has the stuff to be a really explosive bullpen arm if he develops properly.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess one guy, I guess you guys haven't mentioned, like to maybe wrap it up, would be Josh Baez. And you know, it hasn't been pretty at single A with the amount of reps that he's had. But like we said, this is the end of the list. And this guy, at the end of the day, he's still an ex-Wilbekon god in the sense that he's like a 70 power guy or 70 raw, and he's got like a 45.5% fly ball rate, and he's still pulling over like 40% of his balls of his batted balls as well. So when he's making contact, it's all like smiles and rainbows. But when he's not, it's like not good at all, right? So hopefully he's potentially improving on that barrel accuracy. It is a longer lever with him being 6'5", 6'6". So it's never going to be pretty in terms of the pure barrel accuracy. But I'm hoping that, you know, with him still being 20 years old, this is what is essentially would be his junior year of college if he was there. And you
Yeah.
know, there's still going to be other guys who will be coming in at single A. And he'll be starting at Peoria this year, ideally at high A ball. So we'll see what he does there. And everybody else will still be in their spring season and college. And even the best conferences in the Power Five and the best teams and the best players probably stack up to about single A comparison, or I guess difficulty, or you know, the talent level. So he might be slightly above and he's still like kind of there. And obviously those guys are more projectable with the barrel accuracy, but I still want to give a guy like Joshua Baez a chance because of the power speed combo. I think that will, I'll give a profile like that as many opportunities as long as he's still
Yeah.
like walking and showing that he can produce that plate at least to a decent level.
Yeah. So looking at probably won't be the final vote total because it's Wednesday night for us, but right now Honeyman is your number 20 prospect. That's where we're stopping. But if you just kind of count, you know, the ballots from there, which not necessarily the way everything plays out, but it's an indicator. 21 would have been Showalter, and I definitely agree with that one at 26%. And then there's a huge drop off. So those are kind of the next two in line. I think that makes sense. Then there's Cesar Prieto, who probably would be around the right place for me. And then Drew Rom, both at 11%. And then Ryan Fernandez and Joshua Baez at 8% and 7%. So that's kind of your top 25. It makes sense for Prieto and Rom to get some votes in there as more recognizable names, but you know, the Cardinals, if you think about it, they've got major league talent. I say that with quotes for those of you that are listening, you know, all the way down to 25, because Drew Rom will be in the majors this year, and he was in the majors last year. Cesar Prieto at some point will be in the majors. Now, are they going to be full-time starters? No, but you know, if you're getting even someone that can contribute for a couple weeks at 25 in your system, you're doing pretty good. And it's a pretty good measurement of the system. We've got others too, like Pajes is going to be a major leaguer at some point down there in the 15s or so, you know, 15 to 20. And there's some good talent overall in the system. We'll have to see how it all plays out this year. But any final thoughts on the system as a whole and the rankings and how it went this year? Gabe, it was your project. How did it go, man?
The interesting thing for me was how much better 10 to 20 seems than last year,
Yeah. Yeah.
where like, at the end of the list, we're like, why are we still doing this vote? Nobody's interested in these prospects. And at the end of this vote, I was like, I feel like I go longer because there's still some interesting prospects that like Showalter, like Alec Willis last year was 20th and he tied with Ranier Lopez, who is 16, hadn't even pitched in the Dominican Republic. And they basically tied for the 20th vote. And I think Lopez would have been the 21st vote. People wanted me to put Lopez on the list. And I was like, he's a pitcher who hasn't pitched in the Dominican Republic yet. And he's 17 years old. I just don't feel like you could
Top
It's not a
20
guy who should
prospect.
be even consideration for a top 20 prospect.
Yeah.
6'7" and T's 95 though. That's nasty.
He's so far away. That's
I know.
he's so far away. Like, look at Jonathan Mejia, who's actually a hitter and did well in Mid Republic, and then he fell off the list. Maybe he should deserve a little shout out today. I don't know, because he's similar to Baez, being very young, has a lot of time and has tools, but kind of bombed out a little in rookie ball. Baez didn't really bomb out, but you get the comparison. Yeah, the stark difference was 10 to 20, where I like Moises Gomez was 10th last year, which was insane.
Yeah, it's
But
insane. What made sense then?
no, it didn't.
Well,
It did not make
based
sense.
on his production level and the system, though, it made sense then.
Well, yeah, I guess that's the point. I don't think Gomez would finish 10th coming off the season he did in this year's list.
Oh no, yeah.
He would be in the top 20, though.
Well, that's it. That's our top 20. Viva Alberto's. Great job, everyone. It's great to have a site that knows all so much about prospects, and great to have a lot of experts here on the site. And this was, as you guys see, we could talk, not me at all, but the rest of these guys can talk all the way down to 25, 30, 35. Who knows where some of these guys would have landed. So, your prospect expert team at Viva Alberto's knows what they're doing and can create great content. So we'll see. We will be back with more stuff here in a few weeks as we start the season. But I would anticipate that not too long after the start of the season, this group, maybe we'll even bring an outsider. We haven't had Kyle with us for a while, so maybe we'll look at Kyle or someone like that and talk minor league season and expectations here soon. So all year long, we'll be bringing you major league content and minor league content because we know how much you guys like that. But for Blake and Adam and Gabe, thanks so much. We'll see you around the site and have a very happy Saturday. See ya.